greetings, new and regular listeners. Glad to have you along today. Thank you for tuning in. This is Red Ice Creations Radio. My name is Henrik, and in case you don't know, we are based on the west coast of Sweden. We are here on Thursdays and Sundays, and we're available, of course, worldwide at our website, redicecreations.com. That's redicecreations.com. And today we have Gary A. David back with us on the program. He is the author of The Orion Zone, Ancient Star Cities of the American South. And he's got a new book out called Eye of the Phoenix. And for those who remember the previous show we did with Gary, we focused on the content of his first book about the Hopi Indians, about their legend on the about the Massow and the Orion correlation in the high desert of Arizona. Fascinating subject. And the website, by the way, Gary's website, is theorionzone.com. That's theorionzone.com, where you can find much more articles and writings and information about his books. And Gary has written some excellent articles that we've featured on our website, redicecreations.com. And a few of these subjects are addressed in Gary's new book. So I'm looking forward to talking more about this here today with Gary. So, it's a pleasure having you back on the program, and thank you for coming on, Gary.
It's good to be here, Henrik. Thank you.
Excellent. Looking forward to the program, and nice having you back again. You know, for new listeners that might be new to your material or research, maybe you could give us kind of an outline, I guess, of your you know, your overarching theory or I guess research and where this has led you. And I guess we have to backtrack a little bit, but before we dive into the new content of your new book here, if you will, give us a little bit of a brief overview, if you can.
Okay, yeah, this started about over 10 years ago, it's basically, it started after I had read The Orion Mystery by Robert Bouval, and I was living in northern Arizona, and going up to some of the sacred rituals, the Kachina dances on the Hopi mesas that the Hopi have every spring and early summer, and I was driving up there, and the Hopi live on basically three mesas, and they're separated. They're large mesas. They're separated by about 7 miles, and they go from east to west, and they're kind of in a line. And you know, I was kind of daydreaming on my way up to the to see the dances, and I was just wondered, well, maybe this is another Orion correlation similar to the one on the Giza Plateau in Egypt. You know, the pyramids that supposedly reflect the Bell Stars of Orion.
Right.
And you know, I just kind of was thinking about that, and I put it in the back of my mind. And then when I got home from the Hopi Mesas, I got out the star chart, and I got out my maps, and I looked, I compared the two, and I found that there was either a Hopi village or an ancient Hopi ruin site corresponding to every major star in the constellation. Hmm. And, you know, this really got me going, because, you know, even Robert Bouval's theory does not accommodate for every star in the constellation. So
that's right.
You know, this was just an amazing synchronicity that that the Earth would reflect the sky with such precision.
And, you know, why don't we just mention a few of these sites, because I've been looking at a few of them here today. I guess we could start at the top one, that the one that's correlating to Rigel, and of course on your website you have a map of this, but the star correlating to Rigel is a place called Betakin. Am I pronouncing that correct?
Well, it's called Betatakin. That's a Navajo name.
Right.
This is one of the early sites that the Hopi people migrated to. They spent many centuries migrating from one site to another, and Betatakin up in northern Arizona is one of the places. I should say that if you look at the map on my website, and there's a map links on theorionzone.com, and it's a good idea to go check that out if you're by a computer, because you can see the that the correlation is also reversed, similar to the one on the Giza Plateau. It's facing south rather than the way the constellation faces in the sky, north, you know. Robert Bouval has taken a lot of heat from academics and astronomers like E.C. Krupp, saying that they couldn't possibly, it invalidates the whole theory. But
right.
if you think about it, you know, think about standing on top of the Great Pyramid and looking south, and you would see Orion rise in the east and arc across the southern sky,
mm-hmm.
and the Orion correlation would mirror Orion in the sky. But you have to be facing south for this to happen. And this is true for the Orion correlation in Arizona as well. It faces basically southwest rather than the southeast like the Giza correlation.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But the people would stand on either one of these mesas, and they would look towards the south southern sky and see Orion arcing across the southern sky. So. They went from place to place and set up villages, and then strangely enough, they abandoned some of these villages and went on to other places. But you say, Batatican is there's really two major ruin sites, Batatican and Keat Seal,
mm-hmm.
which is a few miles from Batatican, and these are both mammoth cliff dwellings. The pueblos, or these ancient stone apartment buildings, we could say, they were built underneath these huge alcoves, and if you've ever seen a picture of cliff dwellings, there you see these huge stone alcoves just arching upward and protecting the pueblos.
Hmm.
But Batatican and Keat Seal, they're two of the major sites in Tsegi Canyon.
Right.
And they represent the double star. The Rigel is a double star, so
mm-hmm.
these two major ruin sites reflect this double star, Rigel.
Hmm. So all of these places have some kind of construction or monument on them, is that correct?
Well, yeah, they're basically a village site where the people lived,
right,
for a certain time, and they made rock art there, and then they moved on to another site.
Hmm. Are there any kind of sites in between here? Meaning that if we should take the skeptic's viewpoint, I guess they would elaborate and say it's villages, or small settlements all across here, so you could basically take this pattern and overlay it upon any piece? Is that the case here?
Well, yeah, a skeptic could say that because there are literally thousands of small ruins across the American Southwest.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But if you take a look at where the Hopi chose to settle on three primary mesas, and these mesas are far from any running river or stream. They really had to go. They wanted to be at this particular place. These,
right.
The three Hopi mesas.
Mm.
That's kind of the center of their world. That's their axis mundi, or they call it the Tuana Savi,
mm-hmm.
the center place.
Mm.
And they really had to be there. I mean, they could have settled closer to the Colorado River or the Little Colorado River, but they chose to go out into the desert, into these places that just had intermittent springs flowing. So they really had to work hard to survive in these places. And I think the choice was not wholly practical. It was a cosmic choice, and they were led to this place.
Mm.
By their gods, and the gods basically told them where to settle and where to build a particular village.
That's interesting, and I think we talked about this last time you were on the show, that I think we elaborated on the fact that this might have been a kind of a symbol or a veneration to the gods that they recognized in a way or adopted. I don't know, their either astrology or view system or something like that. Has that Has this changed in any way, or why do you think that this they actually did this?
Oh, why? You're asking why Orion, I guess, huh?
Right, exactly.
You know, Orion, it was a very important to many cultures across the world. According to the Hopi, Orion was a constellation that synchronized one of their major rituals, which is the winter solstice ceremony. It's called the Soyal ceremony. And the Hopi ceremonies are basically held in underground kivas, and you get to these kivas through a ladder in the roof, and there's an open hatchway on the top, and you climb down the ladder. And they would use the constellation Orion would appear in the hatchway in the winter, and when it appeared in this hatchway, they knew that they were supposed to start the winter solstice ceremony. So it more or less synchronized. Mm. Very important ceremony, which paradoxically has to do with the sun and bringing the sun back from the south. The sun rises
right
every day a little farther south on the horizon.
Yeah,
and on the winter solstice, it starts to creep back north during each sunrise. So you could see this progression along the horizon each day, and part of the winter solstice ceremony was to make the sun come back north and not just keep going south so the people would freeze. You know, they were very important, but you know, very serious about this, that the sun would just keep going south if they didn't perform these ceremonies. Now, this seems kind of maybe a little odd to us today, because you know, we live in a world that's dominated by astronomy, and we know all about how the sun how the Earth goes around the sun. But for the Hopi, they lived in a world that was very very sacred, and if they did not perform these ceremonies, then the world will get out of balance, and the cosmos would kind of not work properly. So there was a very strong correspondence between what humans did on Earth and what the cosmos was doing, or what the heavens were doing.
And you were visiting during one of these rituals, I guess. So this is something that is ongoing to this day then, I guess, right?
Yeah, they still have rituals. Some of the rituals you non-Indians can attend, mostly the Kachina dances, which are held in the early spring, in the spring and early summer. They are held out in the open in the village plaza.
Uh-huh.
So you can see the Kachinas dance, and the Kachinas are an interesting group by themselves. They're basically spirit messengers, and they take a multitude of forms, and it's so hard to describe what a Kachina looks like because there's so many different forms.
Right.
Basically, the dancers wear masks of different sorts, painted differently, and there are different shapes for each particular dance. Has a certain shape. So the Kachinas, they are the kind of intermediaries between the people and the gods. They come and help the people, and they help to bring rain in this very arid area.
Right.
But, you know, some of the ceremonies are, the Hopi don't let non-Indians witness them. So, and I respect that because, you know, the culture is getting assaulted by modern ways of life, and they're trying to keep the ceremonial cycle going.
Yeah.
They feel that if they don't keep the ceremonial cycle going, then the world will end.
Hmm.
And they're trying their best to keep to remain pure and keep the ceremonies going. You know, it's kind of like what I mentioned before, that if they don't do the ceremony, the sun will just keep going south. Well, if they don't keep doing these particular ceremonies that they've done for thousands of years, this particular era is called the Fourth World. Will end, and many of the elders believe that we're at the end of the Fourth World.
That's right.
ready to go into the fifth world.
That's right. And then, you know, again, if we potentially look back at the past, then there is, you know, a wide variety of different theories surrounding the fact that we've gone through cataclysms in the past, meaning that potentially the reason why these cults, or, you know, astrological cults in a way you could call it, started up was for the fact that they were concerned that another catastrophe would happen again, meaning that, you know, the reason why they are very concerned to keep the ritual going is because they know that as soon as we let go, the earth is going to, you know, wobble out of its axis, or, you know, whatever it might be, a flood is coming or something that actually is going to cause tremendous upheaval. And I personally myself believe that this has happened in the past. And I mean, I think the Hopi, again, as you said, that they talk about this as a fourth world now and soon probably ending. So, I mean, that is something that I guess is quite prominent within the Hopi, you know, mythology. Would you say that's correct?
Oh, yes, indeed. There's a grand tradition of prophecy in the Hopi way of looking at the world. And they believe that, you know, all these earthquakes and earth changes and climate change is reflecting the fact that the earth is getting out of balance. The Hopi like to live in balance. They're people who try through their ceremonies to live in balance with the earth, with the Mother Earth.
Right.
And if they don't, you know, if they don't do the ceremonies, if they stop doing it, you know, they believe that there is a set of twins. One twin is at the North Pole, and the other twin is sitting at the South Pole. And you know, if they don't do the ceremonies, these twins will start shaking the earth and moving it out of its axis.
Yeah.
Axis, and you know, it's a situation that you know, the Hopi, along with all the other Native American tribes, are struggling to keep their ceremonies, to perform their ceremonies, because, you know, even a group north of here, the Lakota Sioux, have the same idea that that the world is it's the fourth world. They conceptualize it as a great buffalo. You know, the Lakota Sioux,
right,
see the a great buffalo, and during each age, the buffalo loses one of its legs.
Hmm.
And every year the buffalo loses one of its hairs. And when the buffalo is tottering on one leg, which it is now, and is completely bald, then the, you know, the buffalo will come crashing down, and the earth will end.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, leading into, I guess, your new book, The Eye of the Phoenix, or Eye of the Phoenix. Tell us a little bit about it, if you will, and I guess my first question to this would be, is this, how should I put it, a continuation from your first book, is that correct?
Yes, it's basically a sequel to The Orion Zone, Eye of the Phoenix, Mysterious Visions and Secrets of the American Southwest. It's kind of a potpourri of anomalies and oddities of that I've seen around here, and it's kind of like I try to flesh out some of the things I didn't have time to talk about in the Orion Zone, because the Orion Zone dealt with the star correlation to a great degree, but this goes out into a lot of different directions. So, you know, if you're interested in reading about the American Southwest and Arizona in particular, then this would be a good one to pick up.
Very good. Tell us a little bit about the, they're different, I guess, animal peoples, we could call them. I think that you address the ant people, the snake people, and the dog star people in this book, isn't that right?
Yeah, the ant people, they have play a major role in Hopi mythology. The ant people were the ones that saved the Hopi from two previous cataclysms. The world has been destroyed three times before, and we're now living in the fourth world. But the Hopi believe that, you know, the ant people, they're kind of a benevolent race, and when the first world was destroyed, it was destroyed by fire. It might be volcanism of some sort, or maybe an asteroid strike of some sort. The ant people gave them refuge in their ant hills, you know, in caves, I guess you might call it.
Right.
They taught them how to survive in these caves by sprouting beans. And there's a bean ceremony in February, or it's called the Bean Dance.
Mm-hmm.
It's held every February, and this commemorates the time when the ant people helped the Hopi survive in these caverns.
Mm.
And the ant people also helped the Hopi during the destruction of the Second World, which was destroyed by ice. Maybe it's an ice age of sorts,
right,
that destroyed these people. The Hopi people.
Mm.
But the ant people helped them. Now, during the destruction of the Third World, which was by a flood, apparently the ant people didn't play a part in that for some reason, and I'm not quite sure why.
Mm.
But the ant people did help the Hopi survive twice before. And you can find petroglyphs of these ant-like creatures all over the Southwest. I have some in both of my books, especially the new one. You can see petroglyphs or rock carving,
yeah,
of an ant person.
Hmm.
It's kind of strange that the Hopi word Anu means ant,
right,
and the Hopi word Naki means friend.
Hmm.
Put those together, the Anunnaki.
There you go.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like Zechariah Sitchin's work with the Anunnaki and the Sumerian deities.
Well, I mean, again, if we were to talk about this as a global civilization in the past, then it wouldn't be either strange that they used the similar words for it, or even, of course, the similar description of it, because they might in fact be talking about the same event. What do you think?
I think, you know, they shared a lot of ideas and even linguistic roots with each other,
right,
in this global civilization. The new book deals with this quite a bit, how the Phoenicians got around to the American Southwest, and evidence of the Hindus near Sedona, Arizona, and the new book goes into this global civilization a little bit more than the first book did.
Hmm, interesting. And then there's both the snake people, and let's hold off on the dog star people, because that's very interesting. But how about the snake people? Tell us about those.
The Hopi also have a legend about the snake people. There was a young man named Teo, and in Hopi that means simply boy. And Teo was sitting by the Colorado River, which flows south, and he was watching all this water flow southward and wondering where it all went. There was so much water, and, you know, the Hopi live in a desert, and there's so much water flowing that way. He just was kind of curious about where it was going. So according to the legend, he got in a hollow log and sealed it with a pitch pine, and he floated down the Colorado River and out into the Gulf of California, and he started flowing into the ocean, into the Pacific Ocean, and went to a series of stepping stones or islands, and he finally landed on the island of the Snake People.
Mm.
And the island of the Snake People, there he met the Snake People. He saw the rituals, and he saw these people turning into snakes before his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Snake People taught him what is called the Snake Dance now. And he took this back to Arizona. He sailed back to Arizona and brought this Snake dance to the Hopi people. He also brought a snake bride, a snake woman bride, and brought her back to Arizona. Hmm. Now the snake dance is held every other August on the Hopi mesas. Now non-Indians are not really allowed to go. In the early part of the 20th century, however, it was kind of almost a tourist attraction that Caucasians would go and watch the snake dance. And during this day, even D.H. Lawrence, the novelist, has written about this in one of his books, but the snake dance, they use rattlesnakes and bull snakes, so they're using poisonous snakes, and they're handling them, and they're kind of putting them in their mouths, and it's basically an attempt to bring rain to this very arid country. Hmm. The snake is worldwide, it's a cultural symbol for water. It's almost a universal symbol,
right,
for water. And the Hopi realized this, and they started doing these snake dances after the Atillo brought it back from somewhere in the Pacific. And the Hopi build round towers. They're round buildings. And they call these, for some reason, they call these snake houses.
Mm-hmm.
So these round towers that you find all over the Southwest, you find them at Mesa Verde in southwestern Colorado, and Canyon de Chelly in Arizona,
and
Hove and Weep in Utah. These round towers are called snake houses, and they may have been, residences for these snake people consequently, as a result of Teo bringing his bride back, they had a bunch of snake people being born there in Arizona. You know,
right.
this is the way the legend goes. You know,
right, right. Well, I mean, do you think it's a symbolic tale that's supposed to tell us something either about potentially an event or an astrological high note in history, or is this actually factual?
It may be symbolic to us. It's hard to read the meaning of a legend.
Of course, yeah.
It works. Legends work on, and mythology works on multiple levels, as Joseph Campbell has demonstrated.
Indeed.
In one sense, I think it may have been an influence of basic flesh and blood snake people in the form of the Nagas of India,
right?
The great tradition of along the Indus River Valley of the Nagas and serpent lore and the Kundalini and all the ritual ceremonies that go along with the snake throughout the ages. So I think it might have been connected with that. These round towers, too, are interesting in that, that's a key architectural structure for the Knights Templar, round temple. And we see this we saw it in the Da Vinci Code. The Temple Church in London is part of that whole thing. But this round structure is part of the Templar mythology, which may have come to the New World at some point.
Right.
There's a structure called the Newport Round Tower, and this is in Rhode Island, along the eastern seaboard of the U.S. And some think this was constructed by the Knights Templar, who fled after their order was being expunged, and in 1307, some of the Knights Templar might have made it to the New World.
Indeed.
after Friday the 13th, October 13th, 1307, they got word beforehand that their order was going to be decimated. So some of them set sail. Some believe that they went to Scotland, to Roslyn Chapel. But others believe that they went across the Atlantic and went to the New World and built this Newport Round Tower. So these round towers, are in the Southwest. They're in New England. These round temples seem to have something to do with snakes or the serpent cult.
Hmm. Very interesting. We've had a guy called William F. Mann on the program according to his own words, at least, he's a descendant of one of the Templars that apparently made it over to America in the early days. And exactly when that was is obviously difficult to kind of pinpoint. But allegedly what happened was that they actually did intermarry with a lot of the native peoples of America. And, both up in the region of where Canada is now, but obviously more south also. So this is obviously a story that, it's popping up here and there, so to speak. It's something that definitely seemed to have happened. And what is interesting is, of course, are these the people that are referred to as the snake people for whatever reason, or do you think that they potentially might just have been around at the time when this happened? Any ideas about that?
Well, I think the Templar received the lore of the Nagas of India, and maybe through the Phoenicians. You know, it was a matter of being passed down, this ancient knowledge being passed down from the Hindus of India down to the Phoenicians, down to the Knights Templar, and then the Freemasons. It's a continuous stream of information flowing from the past, and
right.
I think it has to do with this serpent knowledge that Philip Gardner has talked about the serpent grail and so
right.
forth.
Right. So I mean, is there any kind of connotation towards this was were people that were very evil, or were they friendly? Were they benevolent?
Well, I think the evil part comes as an interpretation of the Christian Church. They had tremendous psychic power and the power of the Kundalini, the serpent fire going up the spine. It was a way of enlightenment that the Christian Church did not want to acknowledge or certainly not to propagate, but even acknowledge this way of enlightenment. So they turned the serpent into an evil being, and Satan, and the tempter in the Garden of Eden, and so forth.
Right, right.
But I think originally, the serpent was a very powerful spiritual way to a spiritual path that meditative techniques surrounded this particular serpent cult.
Mm. Do you think that because if we think about it, the Templars, of course, are obviously they're a Catholic order. They're still a branch of the Roman Catholic Church, and obviously there's disputes going back and forth whether or not they really broke from
it was the Catholic Church that they thought that they were getting too powerful, and they basically gave the order along with the King of France to get rid of this the Templars,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because they were gaining too much wealth and too much power,
right?
And they had a different view of Christianity, a little more eclectic view than the average Catholic. So in the beginning, I think in the 1100s, they were more or less tolerated, the Templars. But by 1300, it wasn't going too well for the Templars, and they decided to get rid of the order and Jacques de Molay was executed and
right, so forth. Right. But now we're back in today, so to speak. But again, it's interesting because, as you said, this is a is a stream of information that is coming out and new stuff is coming to light all the time. And what I just want to mention and pop in there is that now the Templars are, you know, back in the bag again. They're, you know, shaking hands with the Pope again, and things seem to be okay.
Oh, that's right.
You know, what's going on there?
Oh, that, yeah.
You know?
The Catholic Church is trying to change its image, I think.
That's possible, obviously, yeah. They're trying to be more upbeat.
You know, they're trying to reach out to the people.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but they're still not going to give up their absolute power on a spiritual practice.
No, of course.
I think the Templars and, you know, the Freemasons, they, to an extent, had, you know, certain practices and knowledge that the Catholic Church really, really doesn't like.
Hmm, yeah. And, okay, so that is an interesting thing to kind of note there anyway, that we're talking about the snake people. And the possible, you know, going over, so to speak, of the Templars over to America and potentially either, you know, just picking up on some of the mythology or even being there at the time when these kind of things were going on. If we move on from there and talk a little bit about the Dog Star people, obviously,
oh, yes.
What comes to mind is the Dogon tribe of what is North Africa. But this is something completely different. Is that right?
Yeah, this is a little different, and it's centered around a place called Chaco Canyon in northwestern New Mexico. Chaco Canyon was an ancient Hopi site, but other people live there besides the ancestors of the Hopi. It's seen as kind of a dark place. People called the Chichimecs. Live there at Chaco Canyon, and literally this means people of the dog. Chichimecs hunted with bows and arrows and used dogs, and this group eventually migrated south into Mesoamerica, and they later formed what became the Aztecs. So they're kind of the forerunners of the Aztec people in Mexico, but they were living in Chaco Canyon. And what's significant to me about this, it goes back to the star correlation theory of the American Southwest. If you look at the map on my website, there's a link to maps on theorionzone.com. You can see where Orion is in Arizona. And if you go off to the east, you can see the star Sirius, which is the Dog Star, and this corresponds exactly to Chaco Canyon. This is one of the largest and most powerful cities in the American Southwest at its time. It began in about the 900s, the early 900s, and lasted through about 1200. But it was a huge place with huge great halls, they're called. It was this one structure called Pueblo Bonito. It had about 800 rooms. It was the largest apartment building, so-called apartment building,
right.
until one was built in the 1880s in New York City. So pueblos, or you know, the places where the ancient people lived in close connection with each other.
Right.
There were a number of these pueblos in Chaco Canyon. And it just was an immense undertaking to build this place. You know, the largest the pueblo corresponds to the brightest star in the heavens, Sirius, the Dog Star. So, the Chichimecs were living in this place. And some say that this kind of nefarious things were going on, like possibly a terror campaign connected with cannibalism, and because this structure in Chaco Canyon is completely unlike the other structures you find in the American Southwest, which are more humble. This was a grand city, and roads were going north and south. They had ceremonial roads stretching 60 miles in each direction, north and south, and they went as straight as an arrow, north and south. And they were about 30 feet wide, And, you know, for a culture that didn't have the wheel or didn't have any draft animals or anything like that, you wonder why these arrow straight roads were zipping north and south from this city across the desert.
Right, right. Well, I mean, can we really be certain that they didn't have the wheel? I mean...
Well, yeah, it's fairly certain that the Mayans had toys with wheels on them, but
right.
The wheel was never used as a wagon to haul things or anything like that. There's been no archaeological evidence that any wheels were used. So these were completely ceremonial roads going north and south, and there are some. Even one archaeologist, Stephen Lexon, he believes that there was a meridian. He calls it the Chaco Meridian.
Mm-hmm.
It goes north and south and reaches up into northern New Mexico at a place called Aztec. There's another large site there, and it also goes down into Mexico. They're straight on this meridian, which runs north and south, this longitudinal line.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes into a place called Paquime, which is another huge site in Chihuahua, Mexico. So, this might have been kind of a ceremonial road,
right,
of these people, the Chichimecs, that lived there. And they had outliers north and south.
Mm-hmm.
They were kind of projecting their power along this north-south line.
So there's another correlation to the stars again, Sirius and Orion. I mean, again, it seems to be very, you know, actually, if we look at it and think about it, it seems to be much the same way things have been going throughout history. I mean, if we look at the work of, David Ovison or people like that, they're basically, you know, laying it out that Washington is aligned, you know, according to many of these, you know, stars and similar patterns too. It feels like we're just, you know, slightly morphing, and okay, the cities change, but the basic, you know, outline behind the, or even the reason for them is the same, you know?
Well, I think the idea of as above, so below was an ancient maxim, you know, that was Hermes Trismegistus that said that in the Emerald Tablet, that the earth reflects the sky and vice versa.
Right.
But I think this was kind of a global knowledge, going back to the global culture. It was all around the world. In fact, I have on my website, an article that links up all the different Orion correlations around the world, and it talks, different articles that talk about the Orion correlation in Mexico at Teotihuacan, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And the Orion correlation in Scotland, there's one there. There's one in Italy.
Right.
A colleague of mine, Rob Milne, is working on Orion correlations in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So these seem to be all over the world acknowledging this power of Orion in the ceremonial life of the people.
Yeah, very interesting. And we're running out of time here in our first segment, but we're going to continue talking more in the members section, and I'd love to get into some more material actually regarding Freemasonry, because I know that you have some pretty interesting information there regarding Masonic temples being found and things like this. I definitely want to talk more about that. Also get into a little bit more about the 33rd parallel, how this connects to it all. There's much more to talk about the Tao, and I'm also going to ask you a little bit about Votan. I know that you wrote a very nice article on that a while back that I love to talk about. So before we break here, though, Gary, tell us a little bit about how people can get a copy of your new book. Tell us the title, and also give us your website again.
The new book is called Eye of the Phoenix. And it's available at adventuresunlimitedpress.com. It's also available on Amazon here in the States and Amazon UK as well. And you can also order it through my website, theorionzone.com. And, you know, if you don't have a computer, you can call a toll-free number at Adventures Unlimited Press. It's 815-253-6390. You can order it that way.
Very good. And we're going to have that number, in case you didn't catch that, we're going to have that number up on the information page relating to this interview, in case you want to give a Adventures Unlimited Press a call there regarding this book. So we'll take a short break right here, but stay with us, Gary, and we'll talk more after the break. We'll continue our fascinating discussion with Gary A. David in our members section. We'll talk more about the Eye of the Phoenix, Freemasonic symbolism, Templar or Maltese crosses and swastikas that all have been found on Hopi rock art, and we'll discuss the connection. We'll also talk about mesas and pyramids in Arizona, word root correlations, and much more, so do stay with us. Head on over to redicecreations.com, that's redicecreations.com, and click on subscribe to find out how to sign up and tune in. Before our break, I also want to mention that Fredrik and I will be away from the Red Ice headquarters until next Thursday. We're going over to Liverpool, England, to attend the Beyond Knowledge conference that we've been focusing on for the last few shows, and to stop by London for a few days. We'll bring cameras and mics, and we'll have interviews available from the conference later on in our member section. Heads up on that. So this coming Sunday, May the 4th, there will be no Red Ice Creations Radio, but we'll be back on the following Thursday with Anthony and Dave from Wise Up Journal and We Are Change Ireland. And keep checking back to our news section. Our contributing news editor, Rosa Sparks from Australia, will be handing the news updates while we're gone. Thank you for listening, and thanks to Frederick behind the controls. More Gary A. David next up in the member section.